Evident Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour. Got a great show lined up for you tonight on this, June 4th. On the West Coast, and June the 5th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Either good evening or good morning to you folks, depending on where you are. Well, what's been up? Well, I got a video done. I re-recorded last Friday night's show, May the 29th, and that was with Jim Murray when we got a call from General Jeremiah of the Galactic Federation, Galaxy of Hendon, and he was sharing a lot of information with us about their various ships and what their goal is, what their purpose is for being around the Earth, and it's a very inspiring interview, to say the least. Jim and I were both surprised to get a call from space, but that really happened, and I was promised some photos, and those photos came in, and so I put it into a video, and I'm going to be posting it on my site. I'm going to make it available to folks on a disc. If you're interested, we're going to work that out. We should have some indication as to what we're going to do. Probably make it easy for you to get it through BBS. I've got to work those arrangements out with Don and Doug Newsom. But we'll work something out that it'll be very affordable. This is something you're going to want to have just to have some of the pictures that are in this. These photos that were sent from the planet Balqui. And when you see this, as we were told on the show, it looks very much like Earth. But I challenge anyone to tell me where any of these places that are in these photos exist on the face of the Earth, particularly a certain volcano. I know you're going to be amazed by this. And I've watched it several times in the process of making it and reducing sizes. I've got an iPod cell phone size, a PDA size, size for posting it on the web, an easy stream, lower quality version, but not that much is really lost in the quality. To have the bigger version, you get a bigger screen, a higher screen resolution, and so the pictures are extremely moving, to say the least. So, I entitled it Evident Footprints Meets the Galactic Federation, Galaxy of Hendon, and that will be available on a video CD. I don't think a DVD is necessary at this time. However, if I make more of these, I'll make sure that they're available on a DVD. So, with that, and all the madness going on in the world, nothing has stopped, nothing has that we talk about in this show has miraculously stopped for one reason or another, and we're going to talk about all the madness that's going on in the world and bring some solutions forward. I was on this gentleman's show last Friday, earlier in the evening, and also Saturday with talk show host Greg Evenson. And we had those two shows together, and then I invited them to Oracle Broadcasting Network when I subbed for 2 hours for Michael Herzog. So we've had, out of 2 days, we had a total of 5 hours together on the radio, and the show was heard around the world as well as this evening. So, and I'm going to let Drew tell you a little bit about that. Our guest this evening, a former U.S. Marine Corps and a researcher and a talk show host of his own talk show, A Marine's Disquisition, Mr. Drew Raines. Drew, welcome to the show.
Thank you for the invitation. I'm proud to be here. I really am.
Well, I'm excited. So I think we're going to have an uppity time. I'm going to warn the listening audience, you are not a walking quaalude, okay? Okay? You're a barrel full of no-dos, to say the least.
Oh, me. I drove a truck over the road for 3 years, and the dispatcher said I was a natural because I didn't take pills, I didn't smoke, I did drink, but I drank only when the rig was parked and I was going to be down for 2 days, and I knew it. And I didn't get drunk. I just had a few drinks and would go out and dance, mostly dance. When they found out that I was out at the honky-tonk and I would dance after pulling a rig for 10 solid hours that day, they just couldn't believe it. I'd sit there and dance for 4 hours until 3 o'clock in the morning. And I said, where does this guy get his energy?
Well, Drew, since I was talking about this event last Friday, and by the way, I really appreciate having been on your show and your effort to come on the show that I set for Michael Herzog on Oracle Broadcasting Network. That was mighty huge of you to do that. That was a lot of work.
And that was my Sabbath day, and I sat down and prayed about that and got inspiration to set in and do that show with Greg on his 2 hours, then turn around and did 2 hours with you, and then turn around and did a 2-hour show later that evening with Larissa with Matthew, and Larissa ended up doing most of the talking.
Wow.
In Sochi, Russia, which was really at 8 o'clock in the morning their time. So I ended up doing a whole lot of radio, and I'm still trying to find the few pennies out in the ground out here in the front yard that maybe somebody drove by the house and threw some pennies out there, palms or whatever.
Well, before we get into anything serious here, I wonder if you could let our listening audience know some of the folks that are joining us tonight. And hopefully they'll keep doing this, even when you're not on the show.
We've got a Wind Talkers Radio Network is privately owned individuals, former Marines, Air Force, Navy, enlisted and officers, retired and non-retirees, who have honorably served the United States military and basically got set up with the corruption of the judicial system, corruption of the legislative system of the United States, basically in a handbasket. They got set up with the immorality of the United States of America, and that's United spelt with a lowercase u, the sovereign individual states, and they found no place to go where there was some revenue officer, i.e. policeman or state trooper or FBI, alphabet soup agency, trying to find something wrong with what they were doing, and all they wanted to do was, quote, live free to die.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't going to sit here and work their posteriors off and pay a ton of money to live on the land that they own. So eventually, over the years, many of these guys found out, there's this irate former Marine that's an electronic engineer, holds two patents in electronics, and they heard me on Frank Whalen's radio show on RBN. Mm-hmm. And Frank Whalen at that time brought Joe McNeil in, and Joe McNeil and I did a little talk show one day about, it's real simple to set up a micro-broadcast station, and you could turn that micro-broadcasting station to a radio network with a simple 250-watt amplifier. If you want to, you can get you a 1,000-watt amplifier and slap a 250 on the side of that, or you can put 250 side by side, you come up with 25,000 watt amplifier real fast. But you, mm-hmm. you needed some buffers and a few other little things. It was a whole lot cheaper than buying a $250,000 or even, and nowadays, a $500,000 radio station. Mm-hmm. They could put it together for less than $5,000 and put the truth out instead of what the government of the country in which they were living in or their new home. And most of these guys are married to nationals in places like, of all places, Iceland, Sweden, Sochi, Russia, Kazan, Russia, Germany, Scotland, Ireland, Wales, and don't ever call somebody from Wales a Brit. You want to start a fist fight brawl at the local brewery? Call somebody from Wales a Brit. They mm-hmm. will be all over you like smell on manure on a hot Sunday. But a lot of the guys live in South America. We don't have anybody in Africa at this time, even though there has been some of the guys talked to some of their buddies who now live in Africa. But the three guys that lived in South Africa have moved out because of the apartheid group down there. Mm-hmm. And they've moved into other places in Africa, and they're looking at putting up micro-broadcasting stations in their country, but really they won't be micro-broadcast. They'll be full-fledged 25,000-watt radio stations because mm-hmm. 25,000 watts, they will have a coverage area about the third of the size of Arkansas.
Yeah.
There's no radio over there. There's no entertainment. And the governments of all these African countries, they don't have licensees or Gestapo running around trying to see who's what and where.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these guys are all ham operators. Matter of fact, all of them but one is a ham operator. And we've got listeners tonight in Sochi, Russia. Matter of fact, Larissa and Matthew just hit the deck here about an hour ago and called me and said wanted to know what I would recommend for a show for them on a Friday morning, which is a little after 8 o'clock their time. And
mm-hmm.
I told him, I said, well, stick around. I got a personal friend, Don Nikoloff, and he's asked me to come on their show and, or his show, and y'all can carry that show for an hour or so.
Well, we want to welcome, Larissa and Matt and, all the other folks around the globe that are listening tonight.
And Doug is in, he's over in Ireland, and he's running the 6 o'clock, he just chimed in with an IM to me telling me that I did my news. The BBC is, in turmoil over here, but we're running your program. I didn't really want to sit here and do a whole hour and a half of news, in local news because there's really nothing out there that anybody wants to listen to.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it's really,
okay.
A lot of people don't realize talk radio outside the United States is 10 times more popular.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And now this enables the significance of all this is there are people, of course, if they're streaming on the web or listening on the radio, they can pick up our stream on the web straight from BBS Radio. But if they're in their car or they're outside someplace and away from a computer, they can be listening locally on a radio, which is fantastic. That's
well, what
awesome.
What we've got set up is we also have an iPod system, and that's tied into the international phone bridges that's running right now in Sweden, Wales, and Russia, as well as here in the United States from my website. And you can, you know, somebody's driving down the road, you know, or in a pickup, you know, an 18-wheeler, they can go to the site and, they can click on the iPod feed and boom, they're gonna come up with the phone bridge iPod, for this show. And it's probably a few guys will probably tune in and they'll be looking for my afternoon show that I had today with Bob Chapman and they're gonna hear this live.
Yeah, well, that's great. Okay, so we welcome all those folks. Drew, per my introduction, and I just want to come back to that a little bit, you got to hear the show on the 29th of May. Now, the archive is not up yet, but this is going to be one heck of an archive to have posted on my Evident Footprints page. That's on my website, directlightproductions.com. This is a movie. It's really a movie, in a sense. I think it's the way to present what we talked about that night. And I have a lot of photographic evidence that I put in it. When you see these photos, Drew, you are going to flip. I'm telling you, anyone that sees these is absolutely going to think that they've died and gone to heaven.
I tuned in. That was the first night that I actually had the opportunity to listen to your show, because I was preparing to see what kind of listening audience you had, as well as feed the show off to places around the world for other guys to test. And I was floored, to say the least, as an electronic engineer, as somebody that investigates, you know, different things, and have the knowledge of Nikola Tesla, who's my inspiration to even walk. I live and breathe Nikola Tesla, and I've got most of his patents here.
Mm-hmm.
Both of my patents are based on his technology.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that intrigued me the most was when I sent you an IM and asked a question about the crystal skulls being possibly being a storage device that we just don't have the knowledge to pull the storage material, much like a hard drive on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
The man that you were talking to literally came back and said, yes, they've been around for several million years, i.e. 20.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, very few people that are electronic engineers there's very few of us out here that would have accepted what he had to say from anybody else. But the way he put it, our jaws hit the floor.
Well, I was aware of this, but, you know, I had to ask this question for the sake of the listening audience, you see. I even put pictures of the crystal skulls in the video, as well as Michael St. Clair's nuclear resonators. And he was kind enough to loan me those photographs to put in there. So while he's talking about the technology, you can actually see it.
Right. That was another thing, you know, that I was working in resonating signals in 1981 and in perfecting the resonating video portion of signals bouncing off of satellites and signals from ham operators bouncing off the moon back to the United States. And everything kind of fell in like all of a sudden I'm talking to people that know, that understand what I think and why I can't sit around and have conversations with some people when they start talking about electronics and electricity, because they're talking in first grade, and I'm out here in the 12th, graduating into college.
Mm-hmm.
So they bore me to death, and I was
truly
intrigued.
Well, Jim Murray has been longing for that day to occur, which occurred on Friday, and they've been tracking his work. He's absolutely brilliant, and he is in the area of power production, proper and innovative use of power, transfer or transmittance and generation. And he's absolutely brilliant. He's a student of Tesla himself. And
I understood that was what really intrigued me, you know, around it when he brought, it wasn't like I prodded you to bring up Nikola Tesla. He brought it up and I said, wait a minute, this guy is, he's in the same dinner table with me here.
What's for dinner?
What's for dinner? Beef. Well, you know, today's beef happens to be the beef of Nikola Tesla. Even Einstein made several statements that Nikola Tesla was more intelligent than he was.
Well, yeah, of course. But they had to promote certain types of propaganda, so they pushed Einstein out there because none of what he said made sense, and a lot of what he took, I'm of the opinion that a lot of it was borrowed.
Oh, 100%. Even the Philadelphia experiment was all Teslas, and when the Army and the Navy sort of overruled what Nikola Tesla wanted to do, and in going over, and they went behind his back to three other major physicists, including Einstein. Nikola Tesla walked away from them, and he telling them that they were going to have some catastrophic problems. And sure enough, when it was all said and done, the military was able to make a battleship disappear, but when it came back, there were men in the middle of the bulkhead, or they had their half of their arm was in a bulkhead, or maybe their arm was out of the bulkhead and they were inside the steel. It was horrible because they literally, i.e. the Navy, had to have persons walk around and cut off people's bodies. That was because when the ship came back to the resonating of to this realm, there was over 27 men that were trapped inside the steel. And it was kept secret for 20 years. But there were like two men that went missing totally, and it's now being leaked out that they went through time.
Well, I talked to Al Bielek, in fact, at great length to this. I haven't had him on the show. His health hasn't been that well. In fact, we're not even sure if he's alive. But nonetheless, Al talked about that. And then when I was writing, or let's say when I was doing my research on the Bush family, and there was an element of Tesla that I wrote about, Tesla's death, that Otto Skorzeny had admitted that he and Reinhard Galen murdered Tesla. And he gave the date and the place and everything. And nobody would admit to something they didn't do like that, but he wanted that information out. And he described going to the Philadelphia experiment, sort of hanging out, watching what was going on. And when all hell broke loose, basically, when this accident occurred that you're describing, they went, meaning Galen and Skorzeny, and they took two of the Utrons. There were three Utrons on that ship, and they took two of them. They stole them and gave them to Hitler. So there was something there to put in flying saucer technology right there.
Well, here's one of the things that that Tesla made the comment that back in 1939 that he felt that there were Hitler spies, well entrenched within the spying apparatus in the United States. The Department of Defense did not have a spying apparatus really before World War II. They were just babies in playing out there. The British were the perfectionists, and if it wasn't for the British training the Department of the Army or the Department of War, all of what they needed to know, the United States would not have had any spies at the end of the war. And to make a long story short, the top secret eyes only reports weren't even released. I mean, normally they're released about 30 years or 50 years out, but in 1995 they were still classified. No importance to anybody, but what was unique about this was there were so many of Hitler's spies in Washington working directly for the Department of War that the Nazi war machine and their scientists actually were light years ahead of anybody on the planet in creating nuclear fission. And it's been rumored. I've never read the top secret that are still remaining top secret reports that the four nuclear bombs that the United States ended up having at the end of the war were originally in the possession of certain individuals in Hitler's regime, but these people protected those nuclear bombs in not letting Hitler know about them. Because they felt Hitler would destroy places like Paris or London, and with the V-2 rocket, well, he came up with, they had the V-4, and the V-4 could have easily have left Brandenburg and flown all the way to New York City, and the attitude was, if he had that 54 kiloton, okay, or 54 kilos, kilograms of nuclear material.
Okay, yeah.
He would have used that to blow up New York City just as a vengeance to end the war.
Yeah.
Now, 54, we're talking about 54, kilograms of nuclear, you know, right now there's more nuclear waste in a bullet, in a 70 caliber bullet, than what they used to blow up Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
Hmm.
A lot of people don't know those little tidbit stories out there, but you have to work in intelligence in the State Department or one of the branches of the service to pick up these little tidbits, and it's not all out there. The only reason I can talk about it right now, it's been over 50 years. My 30-year contract to keep my mouth shut ended 2 years ago, and they'd like to take me out. They'd really like for me to shut up, and they, meaning the powers to be in the government, because they didn't realize, working with the embassies, how much information I was obtaining. But it wasn't. I wasn't looking for this information, Don. It was just there, but my mental memory of reading and researching and seeing it, you know, it was like God was leading me to know these things so the truth could come out at a later date.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, heavy stuff. Heavy stuff. Now, what's going on in your world today, Drew? Tell the people a little bit about what you've been doing, and you know,
trying to pay the electric bill and the phone bill.
Aren't we all?
To be quite honest with you, I'm not poor mouthing anybody, guys. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm doing exactly what I want to do, and that is to get the truth out there so the masses can wake up. I don't care about, you know, I'm 61 years old. I don't look 61 years old. I darn well don't act it. And I don't feel it.
Yeah,
I'm as active as a 40-year-old, and I have several friends that tell me that today's 60 is yesterday's 40. And I work circles around a lot of men out there between 30 and 40 years old. You know, I've got some friends. I've got a second cousin. I got a second cousin that is the son of one of my favorite first cousin, and he's 36, and he can't even hold a candle to the amount of work. I hit the deck at 5 o'clock in the morning. I go to bed at 1 and 2 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always out there trying to find out what's going on in the world. And you ask me what I'm out here doing. I'm out here enjoying life as best I can with all of these revenue officers running around. And as I said in the beginning of the show, we've got Marines that have left the United States, Air Force personnel left the United States. I got a guy that was that has a Silver Star, 4 Purple Hearts, Vietnam veteran, retired, 30 years, Green Beret, United States Army, and he lives down in Costa Rica. Hmm. You couldn't pay him to come back to the United States. You talk to him, and he says, why do I want to go back to that place? There's more cops running up and down the highway, writing people tickets for traveling on the land. Americans don't realize that 230 years ago, they fought the greatest nation in the world for the right to travel without papers. And they turned around 40 years ago. Most Americans have a father, an uncle, a cousin that has died in World War II for the right for people to have liberty without papers. And you try to walk around any major city in America without your papers after 10 o'clock at night, and I guarantee you they're going to haul your posterior down to the caboose and get your fingerprints.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you hear that Hal Turner, I almost said Hal Lindsey. I think that was a slip.
There's a big difference between Hal Lindsey and Hal Turner.
Yeah. Hal Turner was arrested today. He was called, what I read, a little article, just a quick blurb, that he was called by a police station in Connecticut that someone had threatened to kill him or something, and they wanted to inform him of this, and he went in there and they arrested him, charged him with harassing communications, whatever that is.
Harassing communications.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true. Hal can be pretty out there, you know, with what he says. Let's say he's very colorful.
I would agree with that comment. I would agree with that.
But one of his most recent stories was his take on what's going on in North Korea. But I wonder if these stories aren't planned to get out like that, which we've talked about on this show and even your show. We went into that. Have you heard anything new about what's going on in North Korea right now? And I don't mean what the mainstream is telling us, unless you feel it's pertinent to what you know.
I have two things that I'm not at liberty to discuss.
Okay.
I will tell you this, that we do have B-2 bombers that are positioned at the Air Force base in Okinawa.
Okay.
I can't tell you how many. I will just tell you there were several. I will tell you that I can tell you that there is a large contingency of, matter of fact, two full battalions of Marines on full 100 A1 alert.
Mm-hmm.
And the Marine Corps does have two squadrons of C-130s and along with two C-5As that belong to the National Guard. It's either the Maine or Rhode Island. C-5A Global Masters. They haul, those two Global Masters will haul 592 fully equipped Marines, combat Marines, per plane. And the two squadrons of C-130s, the squadron is 17, so you've got 34 C-130s, and a C-130 will hold approximately 150 to 180 Marines, depending on how they have it outfitted, and if they've got if they are carrying any vehicles whatsoever inside. You can do the math, and you're talking about what you can look at. And a lot of people don't understand. You want to follow the military anywhere in the world, especially the United States military. Follow the toilet paper.
Yeah.
Literally. You follow the toilet paper. You follow the eggs, the bacon. You follow where the food's going. You can literally find out where the largest contingencies of military personnel are.
Yeah. Well, you and I had mentioned this, or you mentioned this on another show, or a caller did, I think.
By the way, I just got an IM from a personal friend of mine who says that Hal Turner was not arrested today. He was arrested yesterday afternoon.
Okay.
On June the 3rd.
Yeah.
From the North Bergen Police Department at 4:15 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I heard. Yeah, I wasn't necessarily saying that he was arrested today, but it was reported today.
I was under the impression that he was, that you said, if it had been arrested today, I would have known, I would have heard about it, because Colorado Al does his due diligence in listening to the Turner Network daily, as as does James, another friend of mine, who IMs me quite often. We have a dialogue because he doesn't like the military, and it's hard for him to understand that if it wasn't for those of us in the Marine Corps, the Army, the Air Force that have godly principles and the principles of belief in the Constitution, that he wouldn't have any freedom whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's a certainty. Well, what do you think is going on? I know I answered this question for Greg Evenson on his show, and the word blackmail comes up every time somebody who's really paying attention to this. But who's blackmailing who? Is it Eel and the Bushes ganging up on the Chinese? Or is it the Chinese? You know, what the mainstream media says is the Chinese are behind this. So I tend to think it's the other way around.
Let's call a spade right where it is. There's no difference between the Bush cartel and the Clinton cartel.
Yeah.
The payoff, ladies and gentlemen, it doesn't take rocket science. It doesn't take the genius of Nikola Tesla to sit down and follow the effects, because we're looking at hindsight here. Where you just open up the newspaper records and you see George Herbert Walker Bush come diddy-bopping in under the Ford administration to become the Central Intelligence Agency chief. And run for the presidency of the United States, touching the base water, with Carter, but then looking at really, doing a full-fledged, campaign against Carter, and against Reagan. And, he lost out, literally. The cowboy came to town. The new sheriff was being elected to Dodge, and the new sheriff didn't want to have anything to do with the renegade cowboy. The renegade cowboy was George Herbert Walker Bush and his CIA operatives that were funneling drugs, cocaine, mostly cocaine, some marijuana, but mostly cocaine and heroin from South America into the United States through a little old town called Mena, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And a first-term governor, very young man, popular at that time, was very much swayed by an older man who had this power of the CIA, who also would had money, and also was basically blackmailing this little red-headed boy. Because he was, he literally had these extramarital trysts dating back to his first term in office as governor of Arkansas, and so he was being blackmailed and say, "You keep your mouth shut. We won't say anything about these girls that you're having a tryst with at the cemetery every morning." And these were young girls. I mean, we're not talking about women in their 30s. We're talking about girls that are like 19, 20 years old. And white powder nose that Clinton had at the time, and involvement of that time, from the time he became governor of the state of Arkansas, the time he left and became the president of the United States, there were over 133 people died that had contact with this man.
Well, I think the list on the Clinton body count's a lot higher now.
But that we're just talking about just in that 14-year period.
Yeah.
And he was in bed with George Herbert Walker Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, and people, all you got to do, George Herbert Walker Bush, he was running on the Republican Party against Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan made the statement at the New Hampshire primary that it would, quote, be a cold day in hell before he would accept the running mate of George Herbert Walker Bush. And that was at the very beginning of the primaries.
Yeah.
And it got all the way down. I mean, George Herbert Walker Bush was losing, I mean, hands in glove. I mean, Ronald Reagan was kicking the mat all over George Herbert Walker Bush. It wasn't even a close race.
Mm-hmm.
And, there was no way. But when Ronald Reagan solidified the party nomination in the primaries, he still went on in and campaigned in California and at Sacramento at a speech that my sister went to. I have the picture of her with Ronald and Nancy Reagan. And the comment that Ronald Reagan made at the time was to my sister that she could tell your brother that there is no way that I will accept the nomination of vice presidency of George Herbert Walker Bush. He need not fear that his former commanding officer will be my running mate. Now, we go all, it's all history now, but you see, all you have to do is look at the video pictures of Ronald Reagan taking the nomination. And before the day before he took the nomination, he comes out on the stage and tells everybody and holds George Herbert Walker Bush's hand up in the air that that's going to be his running mate. And people all over the southern states literally almost just wanted to go grab a barf bag. They could not believe that Ronald Reagan had betrayed what he had promised them he would not do. But we feel that the Republican Party behind the scenes, the cigar smokers, literally told Ronald Reagan that he would have George Herbert Walker Bush or he would not. In the air. And there is no way on God's earth that Korea could possibly do anything to the United States or Japan. I mean, at the very worst, they could possibly put together a nuclear device on a ship and take it to the shoreline of Japan and do some devastation. But to pull a ship into Tokyo Bay and set off a nuclear bomb would be like you and me grabbing an AK-47 and walking into the White House with Obama sitting on the front porch drinking his mint julep and eating watermelon. I mean, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, let's look at, to my eyes, I did not like John Fitzgerald Kennedy as a teenager. I didn't think he was going to be a good man for the presidency.
You didn't like him when he was a teenager?
He turned out to be the most honored man that I have respect for.
I was asking, was it him that you didn't like when he was a teenager or when you were a teenager?
When I was a teenager.
Okay. Just wanted to clarify that.
No. I was a teenager when John Fitzgerald Kennedy won the office, and I sat down and I was real upset, really. But Louisiana was one of the few states that John Fitzgerald Kennedy did not win, and I was totally depressed as a 13-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And as the next 3 years proved, he grew on me. And I was one of the first people to sit down and have reservations about his death in my classroom. I can remember the day he was assassinated. I was in Mrs. Ponder's biology class. And the microphone cleared up, and the principal of the school said, "The president of the United States has just been shot, and apparently he is not going to survive the day. We are going to suspend all classes." And
yeah, we had that same announcement.
Most of the kids in high school were just, they were overjoyed because now they were looking at, well, now we got a true Southerner that's going to be the presidency, and we're going to go in and basically kick ass. But we did not know the evil of Johnson. My mother and my grandmother did. They knew how evil the Johnson and the Lady Bird families were. And they cried. They literally cried. They thought that the nation was going to go to hell in a handbasket. And it was at that time that I learned that John Fitzgerald Kennedy was trying to pull the military out of Vietnam, and the war tripled in less than 90 days from a staging point of the John Fitzgerald Kennedy was going to pull all the military out by January 1st. And Lyndon Baines Johnson sequestered that order the next day, stopped the minting of silver coins, rescinded the silver certificate mandate and the gold certificate, $2 bill, and stopped a lot of things that we were talking about that John Fitzgerald Kennedy was doing to bring forth a sovereignty in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So, granted, ladies and gentlemen, I know I'm talking about history, but what does it all have to do with the evil of what George Herbert Walker Bush? Well, we've got pictures of George Herbert Walker Bush at the depository.
Yeah, and he says he doesn't recall where he was.
He doesn't recall being there. He says, quote, "I don't even recall being in Dallas."
Mm-hmm.
We can prove that. That's beyond a shadow of a doubt. But we've got George Herbert Walker, we've got William Jefferson Clinton, we've got the Walker family.
We have.
And a lot of people don't understand these names out there.
Mm-hmm.
And who Hillary Rodham and her family is. You've got to look at these side names. George Herbert Walker, when you look at George Herbert Walker Bush, you look to his mother's family was the Walkers, and they really were the people behind the scenes in the 20s.
Yeah, so well, you, actually,
you
yeah.
Look at all of this, what's going on here? There is no change in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't been a change of political power in Washington, D.C. since Eisenhower brought his massive amount of World War II vets to Washington, D.C., when he took office in 1953.
Mm-hmm.
And then John Fitzgerald Kennedy brought a large number of his Navy buddies from World War II, but he was the first president that was born in this century, the 20th century. And here we are, 44 years after John Fitzgerald Kennedy's dead, and the elitist cabal behind the scenes are now in power to where they have brought their agenda to the point where it's exactly what Hitler wanted to do in the 30s. You
mm-hmm.
can't move in Germany without your papers. You can't go anywhere in Germany without your papers. At that time, they didn't have airplanes to speak of for large masses of travel. Large masses of travel moved by rail. But
mm-hmm.
you went to the railroad station, 24/7 trains in Berlin ran 24/7, much like airports in LaGuardia or at International Dulles Airport. And at that time, you couldn't get on a plane, on a train without your papers. Look at, it's even worse now. You can't even get inside the airport without your papers.
Mm-hmm.
On a domestic plane, flying domestically, just from, hypothetically, Little Rock, Arkansas to St. Louis, Missouri. And do you, Don, do you really think we're stupid enough to believe that there's not technological equipment to keep somebody from walking on a plane with some form of a deadly weapon? This is
stupid. This is all about mind control and propaganda and compliance. You get people, I don't know how much of anything that you can put in a tube of toothpaste, but this is absolutely ridiculous that it's got to be this little tiny travel size
Yeah, you're right on. I was talking to a specialist, intelligence officer from Vietnam, and he said, you know, Raines, this whole smoke and mirrors is nothing but mind control. All that needs to be done is nobody has any carry-on luggage at all. A woman's purse cannot weigh more than 8 ounces. A man's wallet cannot be nothing but that will open up like elongated. It has to be folded. And all baggage, regardless of what it is, all computers, everything goes in a bag and goes on the plane. And you get a ticket stub when you check in to catch the plane. You get a stub for your luggage. When you go to get on the plane, and that luggage is that you hand over your copy of the ticket stub, much like you do when you go to a theater, the usher tears your ticket in two and gives you one half of it. The same thing when you check your baggage in at the airport. When you go to the counter to go on the plane, the steward up there can take your luggage pass, cut it in two where he's got his number, and if all the numbers that he has are checked on the baggage that goes on the plane, if somebody's not getting on that plane, okay, with that luggage gets taken off immediately, and they start looking for the guy that owned that ticket, period. I mean, it's that simple. No carry-on luggage whatsoever. Okay? Granted, there's going to be, every once in a while, you're going to have some stupid idiot that's willing to die for his misled belief. We've got more people getting killed on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday throughout this United States on the highways by an accident than what's died in the airplane crashes for the last 3 years, including the 278 that died just yesterday or day before yesterday on the Air France plane.
Yeah.
And you and I both know, Don, these murders by the elitists, they're taking somebody out.
Oh, yeah. These planes aren't crashing because of failure of how they're manufactured and the maintenance, have either been sabotaged mechanically or they've been taken out using technology.
I'll give you a classy point. Does insurance really protect you? All it is a few dollars out of your pocket goes to pay to somebody else's car wreck that has an accident. Does a driver's license protect anybody from a drunk driver or from running somebody down on the road and leaving the scene? No, but we don't have responsible punishment. We don't have morals or responsibility anymore.
Mm-hmm.
When I was a teenager, I backed my 66 Mustang Fastback into a gentleman's truck or car, and what blows me away is that I left a note on his windshield and told him that I was the one that put a dent on the side of his the left side of his back rear panel. He
mm-hmm.
called my mother up on the phone and told my mother, says, "Don't tell your son that it's not a big dent. It's not that big a deal. I hope his car's all right."
Hmm.
And, you know, I'm looking at the idea that, it probably cost a couple of $100 to fix that, but it wasn't that big a dent, but it was a big enough dent to where it cost a couple of $100 to fix in 1966. That was a lot of money.
Yeah, sure.
But he didn't even bat an eye. He called my mother up, told, and he was more worried about damage to my car.
Yeah. Well, what happens in these plane crashes, there are secret insurance policies taken out. And you know, everybody's got a reservation for the most part, or they enter the data there if somebody's buying the ticket at the airport. And they can get these names put into these pools. And, you know, these are million-dollar policies. These are not policies or more. Could be as high as
term insurance policies. And this particular airplane has term insurance policy on 242 passengers, $10 million per passenger.
Yeah. Yeah,
term
there you go.
Insurance policy. How much did that, how much did those policies cost? Well, you would be totally surprised to know that they only cost $30 a person.
Hmm.
So who's paying for those term policies? Well, it's on your ticket. It's the cost of your ticket.
Yeah.
Well, all of a sudden, when you do the math, it doesn't take rocket science to realize we're talking a huge chunk of change here. You know, at 200, just round it off to 200 and slap that out there at $10 million.
Yeah. So on that basis,
get
that
the money.
That, yeah, the crash in the Atlantic Ocean, this French airliner that crashed a few days ago. I think it was out of Brazil, right?
It was flying out of Rio de Janeiro, 42 Frenchmen, 27 Germans, two Americans, flying back to France.
Yeah,
all
it would
the
be interesting.
Passengers were Brazilian, Paraguayans, and Bolivians.
Be interesting to see who the passengers were, you know.
One of the passengers was the prince of Brazil, from the reigning monarchy down there.
Oh, really? Hmm.
Nobody, you know, I didn't happen to know that right off the top of my head.
Wow.
I had it on my news and views.
Well, We're running short on time here, Drew. I want to mention your website, and anyone that would like to keep you in business. First of all, folks, you need to go to his site and see all the wonderful archives he's got of interviews that he's done or shows that he's had, as well as the many articles. Great research.
Don, I'm not laughing at you. I have a 15-year-old girl that sent me a letter the other day, a real letter, telling me that she had gone to my website and she wanted to know how long it took to put all that information up there, because she had spent over 16 hours looking at the links of news and views that are posted there for the last 5 years.
Hmm.
And she only was able to read 10% of what was there.
Yeah. There's a ton of stuff there, and certainly you have a lot of important information. Now, this isn't a fear-mongering show. We're going to stand up to this tyranny, and at the same time, we're exercising our faith muscles, if you want to say that. And we're trusting that God's not going to help us unless we're able to help ourselves. What are your thoughts on that, Drew?
I'm on your side 100%.
Okay.
I have people that call me and say, well, I'm going to be raptured out of here. I don't care. And I tell them, I says, you're going to be raptured out of here. You're going to be raptured out of here into a fiery pit. Because if God was going to rapture anybody out of here, he would have took Noah and Noah's family and let the rest of this planet literally be inundated and flooded. The bottom line is, you're not going to the flood was a lesson. It told you that two of everything was placed on the ark figuratively. There were places around the world where even the American Indian tribes report of the major flood over the continent, North American continent. Even the Incas talk about it. The Mayans talk about it in their histories. Bottom line is, if two of everything, that means there were two evil people there. So not all good people were on the Noah's Ark or saved. there were two evil people that were placed there because two of every kind was there. Therefore, when this time comes, God says he's going to burn the place, but the bottom line is we're going to have 1,000 years of prosperity and peace promised. Well, who's going to be here? Not those that are going to be raptured out of here into some pit.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be you and me, that those of us that believe in Jesus Christ as our Savior and understand that Jesus Christ was on this planet, and we not everybody, but a group of people, Zionists, fascists of that day, of that era, the control elitists, they murdered him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Bottom line is, I personally feel that Yeshua the Christ has visited not just this planet, but planets all over God's creation. And those of you that don't understand it, just look at the photographs of planets that we have got from the Hubble spacecraft that show a planet 278,000 light years away, that if you were to put it in this galaxy, all the planets of this galaxy wouldn't even reach one-third around the planet. Our sun wouldn't even be the tip of a needle on the back of a flea compared to this planet that's 278 trillion light years away, or 278 million light years away.
Trillion's pretty far. Not that a million
is. Like Nikola Tesla, I feel that there is, if you were to take your thumb and put your thumbs together, and the distance between the farthest place in outer space to here, are your fingers out straight up, perpendicular. So if you're looking at your thumbs together and your hand is out in front of you, your hand and your fingers make a U. And then just fold your forefinger around to where you've actually got a diamond, and I feel that there is something very unique in the time warp continuum of the travel through space can be done, not where we look at time as being 1,000 light years away, but maybe just 1,000 minutes away.
Yeah, or some fraction of that. Yeah,
or some fraction of even that.
Yeah. Well, there are time elements in certain dimensions, and a lot of the space travelers are moving through dimensions, or maybe they're moving in between dimensions. Which
I believe that there is time travel. I feel that it takes a higher degree of morality to be able to travel through time, because you must know that you can't change time.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you do, you change your own time.
Well, yeah.
If you change time in the past, you can't come back to your future, because your future doesn't exist anymore.
Well, you notice there's two basic types of visitors that are described when you consider those that come from other realms to the earth. Two basic types. One of a high vibration, and one that's spending all their time trying to bring our vibration down to a lower level. That pretty much is the twos that you were talking about in Noah's Ark. And I wonder if they had Democrat and a Republican too. The problem there is they're two of a kind, and two sides of the same coin. So there may have only been one, with a split personality.
George Washington warned us about political alliances, i.e., parties, as we call it today. And his greatest fear was that there would be a small group of men and women, well, not women, but a small group of men that would unite in forming not just two, but his fear was three or four parties, and those three or four parties would then control the nation. Well, it's even better. I mean, it's even worse than his worst fears. There are two part. It's a two-party system that is being controlled by banksters from the backside. You take a good hard look at Russia. Do you know how many political parties there are in Russia?
Actually, I don't, but I would presume there's probably a lot.
57.
There
are 42 different parties in Venezuela actually sitting in the Venezuelan parliament.
Wow.
So, you know, we call ourselves free with freedom to vote. We don't have freedom of vote. It's manipulated and controlled behind the scenes.
Yeah. Well, Drew, I want to give your web address out and encourage people to go. We've got to call it a night here, but I want to thank you for being on Evident Footprints, and you're going to be on just about every week this month. So looking forward.
I know you just don't want me to get any sleep. I know.
Well,
my website, ladies and gentlemen, is the three W's: Alpha Mary Delta dot Echo Lima, Echo Quebec, Ulysses, India. You got that?
Yeah, keep
Mango,
going.
Mango, Yankee. It's the three W's, amd.elequity.com.
That's a
and
lot.
And you're welcome. My site is 100% free. If anything comes up there and tells you you have to pay, donate, to read anything, you send me an email, Drew Raines, DrewRaines, at yahoo.com, and you tell me that you can't get the information, I will respond to you ASAP. I will make sure that you can get on that site. It doesn't cost a dime. I'm not trying to be a talk show host. I got, you know, bamboozled in this thing by Jack McClam because he liked the way I loved to scream and bring the truth about the empire builders and unite people that are in the police and the military to let them know that I'm not going to go quietly in the night. And our biggest problem is we don't have a leader out there that can walk around like George Patton or Major General Smelly Darlington Butler or Chesty Puller or Arnie Murphy, who can stand up, stand tall, and be honest, and basically willing to die for liberty, not freedom. Learn the difference of what liberty means and what freedom is. And you're going to find out real fast, freedom is your right to travel with a license or own a gun with a license or go fishing with a license or sell real estate with a license. That's your freedom. Liberty is your right to do all of the above with responsibility of your actions and not having to where you're stepping on somebody else's rights in what they do in their lives. If you don't have intercourse with all of the people around you reasonably, fairly, and honestly, then you're not being honorable to liberty.
Amen.
Enough said?
Yes. Drew, we've got to call it a night now. So, again, I want to thank you.
I'm sorry I talked too much.
That's okay. I want to thank you and also let you know that I'm looking forward to your appearance next week on this show.
We got to get Greg and you together for a show with me in the very near future.
Well, Greg's going to be on next Monday, believe it or not, Greg Evenson. So, and you're on next Thursday. So one of those two nights, I'm sure we can swing something.
Okay, so, I'll try to get at least an hour of sleep between now and then.
Okay. Listen, you have a great rest of the week and a great weekend, and I'm going to say good night to you. Folks, you have been listening.
You're going to call me in a few minutes?
Maybe, yeah.
Okay. Well,
Let's end the show. Okay. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, Drew Raines. Visit his website at amd.elequity.com. His radio show, again, is A Marine's Disquisition. And I encourage you to check out the archives there on his website. Special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. And I do mean everyone all around the world, especially our soldiers overseas. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.